Welcome to the Scotland Grows Show, the podcast where we celebrate Scottish gardening. I'm MT O'Donnell, editor and producer of Scotland Grows magazine, and your host for this adventure. We are delighted that this series of the Scotland Grows Show is sponsored by Roots, a subscription from National Trust for Scotland, which celebrates Scotland's flora in the form of a Roots pack sent to you every 6 weeks, containing Scottish seeds to grow at home, tips from expert National Trust gardeners, and stories and histories of the Scottish plants protected and cared for by the National Trust, thus helping both your garden and National Trust for Scotland's gardens thrive. In this episode, I'm chatting with Eli Appleby-Donald, one half of In the Garden with Eli and Kate. Eli tends an urban garden in East Lothian, which she's managed to make both beautiful and productive. She considers herself a perpetual learner gardener and has spent the last 11 years learning by experience, success and failure. By day, Eli is a digital education guru for a local university, and she finds time to regularly blog and vlog about gardening on her YouTube channel, where she has hundreds of videos all about her gardening journey and her top tips for gardening in Scotland. You may also know her as a Scotland Grows magazine columnist. Welcome, Eli, to the Scotland Grows Show. I'm absolutely delighted to have you with us, not just because you're a fabulous gardener, not just because you're a Scotland Grows columnist, but because you're also a YouTube superstar.
A superstar, really? And here was me all excited to be on your podcast.
No, you're the superstar, and we will delve right into that during the podcast as well, because I'm sure listeners would love to hear about your journey, not just in your garden and about everything we're going to talk about, but also about how you've just become sensational, and you really have on YouTube. But let's go back, I guess, 11 years or so, when you first got into gardening, when you first started gardening. What made you decide then to get out there and give gardening a go?
You know what? It wasn't even so much the gardening a go. It was that thing of Kate and I both had flats in the city centres. So I was in Glasgow, she was in Edinburgh, and we just hated not having outdoor space. Ladies of a certain age, you know, that whole, it's a nice day, we'll go to the park, and you only just get there and you're like, oh, I'm going to have to head home quickly. We just kind of got sick of that type of thing. And we thought, we just want our own space, you know. It's like, it's about time we had a garden. Let's just see what we can find, have a look at it. And that was it. That was the line drawn. It was just an outdoor space. Purely, we were thinking about somewhere to go and sit and enjoy. But you know how it is, if you have that space, you kind of want it to look nice so you can enjoy it. And then that's that little feeling of, you know, oh, you know, I don't want the neighbours talking about us and looking at it, and it's a bit dodgy. So it kind of came from there. But do you know the funny thing is, we talk about this and we try and remember. We talked about hanging baskets and plants like flowers and making it look nice. I do not remember why I got it into my head that I was going to grow food. It just kind of happened. We moved in that night. I ordered the greenhouse.
Did you really?
Yeah, that night. Weren't even unpacked yet.
And you use your greenhouse a lot, so clearly it was a good purchase.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of, I like to, like, this wasn't a plan or anything, it's just how it worked, but I like to spin it as we were being sensible. So I just got a little kind of cheaper end hobby greenhouse, a little polycarbonate thing with an aluminium frame, you know, the ones we all get. I got one of them as a whole, you know, try it out, see how it goes. If I don't really get into this thing, we can use it to store the bikes in, you know, that kind of thing. Okay, to be fair, I mean, it lasted 6 years, but for a lot of that 6 years, it was held together with gaffer tape because we live in a wind tunnel. And there were multiple mornings I was out at like 5 a.m. around the neighbourhood trying to find bits of my greenhouse because I'm blown over the fence and what have you. But yeah, so we swapped that one. We've now got quite a heavy-duty, substantial greenhouse now, because now we know we'll use it. But yeah, that first wee one was just a wee hobby thing, cheap as chips, and did us great for years.
Did the job, and it got you into gardening, and as you said,
you kind of tested out the theory, first of all, will we actually like this?
Yeah, because I think that's it, because I had never had a garden. So Kate grew up with parents that gardened. When I grew up, we had a bit of grass for the kids to play on. My family were not into gardening at all. So I had no idea about any of it. Kate knew little bits, but I've kind of learned it all as I've gone and worked it out from things going wrong and what have you. So there was every chance I might have decided this is too much hard work. This is not for me. But I don't know when it happened, but at some point I got the bug. Possibly that first tomato. You know that first tomato you've grown and you eat straight from, probably that's what did it, to be honest.
And you've never really looked back since then?
No, kind of. It's just got bigger and more, and I think now I've quite truthfully say I've got a habit. I have got a tomato grown habit.
good. So not only did you teach yourself how to garden, how to grow, how to just be almost self-provisioning in some respects, but you then decided to start a wee YouTube channel just to video what was going on in your garden. And that now has over 28,000 subscribers. So what fascinates me about that was in your last column for Scotland Grows magazine, you wrote about having imposter syndrome and often not feeling represented in the gardening world. And yet you've got 28,000 people and more. Those are your subscribers. You've got more than, you've got people watching what you do in the garden and learning from what you do.
Yeah, but I mean, you're quite fancy pants in the gardening world on lots of boards and things. Do you go out there feeling super confident? I think it's just something we all get sometimes.
Yeah, but I feel like gardening is my private space and I don't, you know, I'm not making like you are YouTube videos, so I don't making mistakes in the garden because I feel then I'm always learning. So I quite like when I know that something should be planted in full sun, I like planting it in the shade. Just to see what will happen, because then I like to be able to say to people, okay, that's the recommendation that should be planted there. However, it does quite well there. It just maybe won't produce as many blooms, but you know.
I think that's maybe a misconception of the YouTube thing though, because my mistakes are out there on YouTube. I don't hide anything, and that's deliberate. The thing is, people don't realise this, but I had no intentions of ever doing YouTube. We had a blog. I mean, I've blogged for over 20 years. And we had a blog, and it became about what we were doing in the house and garden. And it was to keep family updated and what was going on. And I did the odd little video to put on the blog. But the thing is, you know yourself, because you have to deal with all the website stuff, those videos take up an awful lot of space on your server. So I then had to find somewhere else to put them. And YouTube is a great place to store videos. Never in a million years did I think anyone would actually watch those videos other than, you know, our dads. But the videos became more popular than the blog, which was saying something, because my original blog got a lot of hits. So it kind of came from that. For a little while, I did it as two separate things and saw them as two separate audiences. But then YouTube just took over. And it was during the pandemic, it really, really took over, because I realised it was two things. One, I was really missing being in a classroom. It hit me really hard. Even though most of what I do is online, it's online digital education I do, but it hit me not being in a classroom, not having that contact. But I was then hearing about a lot of folk that were watching our videos that were isolating. They were on their own. Older folk that had nobody and were completely alone and lonely and struggling. So the channel really, during the pandemic, became about community and connecting people. And I had everyone, you know, the wee thing we did was everyone kind of was like, if you're struggling, comment on the videos and let people know. And then we can make a point of making sure people are in touch and stuff. And that just became really important. And it went over into work as well. When I was dealing with stuff with the students or even colleagues, a lot of them were maybe stuck in halls of residence or that kind of thing, in an apartment with no garden. And it became the joke, you know, if you get your homework done, if you behave or whatever, we'll go out and I'll take you around the garden. And that's how the whole garden tour thing happened. It was me going, what do you want to see now? Walking about with my phone on a stick. You know, and it just, it grew from there. And I just realised that actually we've got something here that can change things and can make people's lives better. So I just started saying, right, okay, I'll do it then. I'll focus on it.
Well, that's a great way to look at it, because gardening in general grew kind of exponentially, or the interest in gardening did during pandemic. But people obviously found you and your channel eminently watchable, probably one, because of your empathy, probably two, because as you said earlier, you weren't hiding your gardening mistakes. You were just saying, I've tried this and it doesn't work. What I love about your gardening videos, though, is that you make them specifically for a Scottish gardening audience, but your channel is viewed in over 120 countries around the world.
Yeah, it's kind of mad.
I love that. Like, you are, we've got some, a little bit similar with the magazine that is viewed, it's read in like 69 countries, I think, at the last count. But Scottish gardening, it travels well. What we're doing here travels well. And you're living proof of that.
Yeah, but I think there's two reasons for that. I think is, one, we think things are very Scottish and it's very, this is about our gardens and our climate and how things work. But also we forget that there are other people with very similar climates, or parts of the year are similar to ours. So there's a whole host of folk in the States or Canada that part of their year is very, very similar to ours, and other parts are completely different. But also, a lot of folk watch just because it's a little touch of home if they live somewhere else. Or I get so many comments from people that they watch because I remind them of their mum or their gran or that kind of thing. And we've got someone who's now become a friend is in Detroit, but our mum and dad are from Glasgow. They're actually from the same part of Glasgow I grew up in. So she loves watching because she says, whenever I watch, I hear my mum. Little things you say and expressions, she says, I hear my mum.
Yeah.
It's little things like that as well. Because gardens, we do it, we build our gardens, and there's so many things we do because of memories and emotions and feelings. I mean, I bet you've got a plant in your garden because somebody you knew grew it, or you took it from someone's garden or a cutting or that kind of thing. It's emotional.
Yeah, I've got plants in my garden that my mum planted before she passed away. Two birch trees, for example, which are in completely the wrong place because they block the sun. And my husband every year comes out with a chainsaw and wants to take them down, and I won't let him take them down because my mum planted them. And now they are towering the height of the house, but they will not be taken down.
Nope, not until someone forces you.
Yeah, so it does bring memories. And actually, you got married in your garden, didn't you?
We did indeed. That was
absolutely
amazing.
So you actually
created
a memory there.
Yeah. Well, it was that thing where we did what everyone else did, and we freaked out and panicked and looked at all the venues and all that stuff. And then we were like, we want somewhere that means something to us. And the two of us just looked at each other, and it's got to be the garden. And there were we had little secret things we did on the day to include the garden that no one else knew about. And it just made it super, super special. You know, we put up a massive big gazebo for everyone to sit in. And for that whole spring, we did everything in the garden based around what's going to look like on the day of the wedding. Nice. So it means we go out and where we sit and things, it's like, oh, this is where I stood when we did our vows. And oh, that's where your dad was sitting crying and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, that's lovely, isn't it? So does that mean you'll never, ever move from that garden?
Oh, no, we don't have no intentions of ever moving. We'd like to buy more land, but we're not moving.
Yeah. So tell us a bit then about what your garden is like now then. So if we were physically doing tours in your garden, bringing people around it, what's your garden like now? How would you describe it?
I think it is the standard boring urban garden. There's a massive big lawn, there's big high fences, there's a shed with all the junk in it, there's a greenhouse, and there's some raised beds on one side.
Except, you know, what you're failing to mention is that it's also beautiful and productive.
Well, yeah. I mean, what we've done is, Kate, but you've got to remember, right, there's two of us, both having the things we like, so there's a lot of compromise. So we have a huge lawn that I'm desperate to put veg beds on, but Kate loves her lawn. She loves a lawn with a passion. So that will never go. That's her thing. So around the outside of that, we've got like a a big flower bed at the fence. And that's what we see when we're sitting on the couch in the house. And you look out the sort of back door, that's what you see. You see that flower bed. So right now, it's the end of October and it is still full of cosmos. It looks glorious still. We've never had a year like this before. At the end of that, right at the end of the garden, is the greenhouse. And then you go left a bit and there's another big flower bed. And then far side, the other side, I've got my veg beds. So that's kind of where, because it's a sunny spot. But the downside is our garden's north facing. So we have an enormous patio that we don't use because it's cold all the time because it doesn't get the sun. But I mean, that's a back garden. The front garden's got, that was the one that had a bit more plan and thought in it because it was completely empty. When we moved here, there were no gardens. It had been an elderly couple and it had all been paved. So we started from absolute scratch. So I laid the lawn that's out in the front garden.
You actually lifted it all. Monoblocking, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, the two, there's kind of like a funny, weird shaped lawn because Kate was just going mad by a bit of chalk one day. I wanted square, but no. And then either end of that, there's these weird sort of triangular shaped, one's a shrubbery and one's a rockery. And the rockery's made with all the monoblock we lifted.
Excellent. So, you just recycle, all good.
More that we didn't really know how to go about getting rocks at that point because, you know, we were a week into having a garden.
So would you say so you said you have to make a lot of compromise between both of you. Are you more the grower of veg and fruit and Kate's more the into the flowers and the shrubs?
I love my flowers. Yeah, I mean, I totally love my flowers as well. We like different flowers. Tends to be more the compromise is more that Kate doesn't go as mad as me. I would go crazy. I mean, I would go full on cottage garden, hardly any lawn and all that kind of thing. Kate likes formal and organised and neat. There is not a weed in our garden. Kate will not have it. Everyone thinks, I get so much like, you know, oh, your garden's lovely. And I'm like, it's all Kate. Mm. She's the one that's out there on her hands and knees weeding and stuff.
Oh, well, it's good that you both then, you know, you found a way to garden together.
Yeah, we've got our own things that we do, our likes and our dislikes. But, you know, you have to work out together. You're a team, so.
So what grows well then in your East Lothian garden? Because you've already said you're dealing with wind and you're dealing with shade.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a complete wind tunnel and we've got a lot of shade. So there's only about a quarter of our garden's full sun and about another just over a quarter is full shade. Not partial, full shade, never gets sees light. So we're only discovering ferns this year. Glorious. We spent a lot of money and a lot of years putting the wrong things in the wrong place. We have clay soil. Yes, I've learned a lot about dahlias and Rebecca. But what does stunning then is cosmos. Oh, you cannot fault them. Sunflowers do amazingly well. Shrubs seem to do not too bad, except I love Hebes. I absolutely adore Hebes. And last year trashed them all, killed them all. Up until then, they had been doing great, but I think a week of -8 just pushed it, I think.
Yeah, I was exactly the same. Yeah, I've had Hebes in the ground for 15 years and, mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you read the hardiness stuff. Yeah, you read it and you ignore it. this year, though, I had a big experiment this year. I have said for years, you cannot grow tomatoes outdoors in Scotland. Nope, you can't do it. I've been in the Courier in Dundee saying that. I'm embarrassed now. Oh, man, I was so you can't do it. This year, I grew 34 tomato plants in my garden outdoors. You can do it, Eli. You just have to put a bit of time and effort into getting the right varieties. And, you know, let's hope that your spring's a wee bit better because this year's spring was stunning.
And get them right into that quarter of your garden that's got full sun.
Yes, they're right up at the far corner. See, now the perfect place would be where Kate's shed is. That's the sunniest spot in the garden. And I want to put my greenhouse there.
A bit more compromise to come, yeah.
Yes, yes. We've talked about it. If we ever replace the shed, I'll move my greenhouse.
So what are your favourite things to grow then in the garden? You're a planner. I know you're a planner.
Yeah. I've got spreadsheets and all sorts. Yes,
all sorts of things. So do you specifically sit down and think, these are things I really like to grow, these are the conditions in which I have to grow them in, or is it not quite as planned?
These days, I'm much more sensible about things. So it is, we grow the food we eat, and we grow the plants we like to look at. So we do that list of what that is that we want, and then I will match it up to, can this grow in the garden? Have I got a spot? So I've got in-ground beds for flowers, but they're clay. So I've also got some raised beds. So it's, okay, is it going to work in the ground, or is it going to go in the raised bed? Is it going to go in the sunny spot, or is it a fern, basically? You know, it's that kind of thing. We still, like everyone, will buy things, grow things just for fun, and it doesn't always work. But a lot of that is where you learn, and, you know, that's the bit that keeps it interesting. If you grow the same thing every year all the time, you'll get bored and you'll start doing less and less and less. Yep, so, you know, we still have those manic, oh, don't let it die!
Going to see other people's gardens, reading about them, you know, talking to people, you discover things and you think, oh, yeah. I've never tried
that.
Yeah.
I haven't quite got as bad as I've heard stories of people taking cuttings when they pass a garden in the street. I'm not quite that bad, but there's times where I've wanted to chap a door and ask, does a neighbour up the road's got this amazing shrub that I'm just like, what is that? So yes, I'm working on it.
Plenty of time to do that. Wait till you get to your retirement, and then you'll have all the time in the world to go around local gardens and
really? Oh, excellent. Okay, good to know.
So if you could only then, and this is the question that all guests get asked on the podcast, if you could only have three plants in your garden, what would they be and why would you choose them?
Mm, okay.
It's difficult.
That is a hard one. Right, okay. Number one, definitely, is tomatoes. It's got to be. As much as it's a bit annoying, because if you can only have three, they've got a finite season, which would be frustrating, but it's what got me going, so it's got to be there, guys. A little bit of the sun gold.
Is that your favourite variety, sun gold, then? Or?
Yeah, and it's one of the first ones I grew, so, and it's stuck with me. So, yeah. I like all the weird... I do a lot of the weird heritage stuff as well, but sun gold's reliable.
But yeah, if you find one that really works well, then it's got to become a staple.
Yeah, exactly. You can rely on it. So if everything else dies, you're okay. I think as well, I love my dahlias so much, and again, finite season, but this year we had tartan dahlias this year, so ooh, white and purple, huge big things with massive big heads on them. Oh, just stunning. So yeah, definitely tomatoes, dahlias, and a little bit of evergreen. Let's go with ischemia, and there's a bit of a story, that's sad story with that. I've got two ischemias in my fence bed, and I absolutely love them. Evergreen, flowers and berries, everything you could possibly want. But there, two of them have died this year. They're on their last legs, and we're going to have to pull them. And we don't know why. We can't work out what's caused it. Super sad about it. But I tell you what, here's a funny one that a lot of people will be absolutely astounded at. I have a thing like that where I don't like the smell of flowers. So we don't have cut flowers in the house or anything like that. And ischemia is one of the only things I like the smell of. I really, really like it.
Is that all flowers? Just a blanket ban, not a particular smell?
Pretty much it's all flowers. To me, they smell like cat wee. Imagine that. People go on about the roses and sweet peas and you should, and I'm like, that's horrible. Which for a gardener, you wouldn't expect that.
No, you know, you're not gardening for scent then. You're gardening for taste, for texture, and for, you know, how it looks and how it makes you feel. And you're not gardening for scent. That's, you're not, but Kate is. She's going out and literally smelling the roses when you're
So Kate's favourite flower in the garden is the astrantia, she has right in front of my greenhouse. And it is, to me, the worst smelling thing in the whole garden. It makes me feel sick. And it's right outside the door of my greenhouse.
But looking good, looking very good.
It looks awesome, and I love taking photos of it, to be fair.
Well, that's a good grandma. So that's three good things to have in your garden then. You've got, you know, some year-round interest, and you've got something to eat, and you've got that beautiful burst when all the dahlias come out late in the season.
Yeah, I think that covers you.
You could live in
that. Can you be unhappy if that's what you've got? Yeah.
You'd live with that. That's fine. That's good. That's all good. So just to finish off, Eli, drawing then on all your experience from teaching yourself like everything that you need to know to garden in the last kind of 11 years and all your experience in making all this fabulous content for your YouTube audience, what would be the best piece of gardening advice you could give to new gardeners? Now, I know you get asked that all the time. So what about people who just want to start gardening? What would you tell them?
You know what? This is going to blow your socks off. Don't listen to people on the internet. I think this is a problem. When you're new, you still have to learn about what's a good source of information and what isn't. And you have to understand that there's an awful lot of people out there just like you who are learning, and they might not be experts yet. And if you look back at some of my early videos, I made some right clangers and was on the internet telling people to do things, and now I'm just mortified. But it's a good example of you need to step back and say, right, okay, they've said this thing and it sounds great. I'll just check if other people are saying that thing, or if that's in a book, or, you know, if it's on my favourite gardening TV show, is that relevant to me? That kind of thing. So it's a real motto of our channel is you do you. And it's you need to learn to say, okay, that's brilliant, but does that fit my garden, my climate, the little microclimates in my garden, how I want to do things? Don't just take everything as fact and just follow blindly, because that's what I did when I started. There wasn't a lot of info on the internet. And you know, thankfully, the last few years, because of the influx of new gardeners, there's a lot more info. But when I started, there was beech grove, and that was about the only thing for Scotland. Everything else was coming from down south. And at that point, as a beginner and not understanding a lot of it, and as I've said before, not knowing all the Latin names for things, even beech grove was just a bit above me, and I just struggled to understand any of it. So I did a lot of things wrong because I copied Monty Don or whatever, or Alan Titchmarsh, got those books as a present. And, you know, you put your potatoes out before the ground's warm enough and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, you've got to stop, look where your info's coming from, and then see if those other sources agree with it.
No, that's absolutely brilliant advice, because it's just so applicable to what we talked about earlier, Scotland being quite a unique, quite a diverse climate from east to west. You're in the east, I'm in the west. What works for you is not going to work for me always.
For such a small country, there's a lot of different weather systems.
And very similarly as well, you, I guess, started making content for YouTube for exactly the same reasons that I wanted to start Scotland Grows magazine, is because the advice that's out there, and some of it is brilliant advice, some of it is great content, but it just wasn't relevant for Scotland. It didn't have a little caveat that say, yeah, but don't you do that in Scotland for another 3 weeks, because you know, you're not ready for that yet.
Or even my favourite thing is, don't just add 2 or 3 weeks on. It's not that simple. Go, but I mean, it was the best piece of advice I learned was Jim said it on Beech Grove 1 year when I had kind of learned enough to understand what was going on. And it was, they don't go a date for your potatoes. Test the temperature of the ground. 10°C, wait till it's 10°C, and that's long way off yet. And I was like, that's brilliant, because it's controllable to me and my garden.
Yes,
and everything's that same bit of advice.
As opposed to, for potatoes specifically, lots of gardeners swear by putting them in the ground on Good Friday, and yet the date of the Easter equinox changes the year. So that's not a very reliable way of putting it, but some gardeners absolutely swear by it. And it goes back to what you say, you do you. If you do that and it works for you, where you are in your own area and your own
microclimate,
go for it. And don't listen to anyone else if you find something that works for you.
But aren't we in a fantastic position, though, that, you know, at some point we'll be out of a job, but it's a good thing, because it means it's because there's so much great info out there now. They don't need us anymore.
And I will happily retire to my garden for the rest of my life and never show my face over the fence ever again. And I'll just potter away until I'm a batty old woman and nobody cares what I think anyway.
That sounds perfect.
Doesn't it just... Only you'll be two batty old women in the garden. You'll at least have company.
We'd just be wandering about in our bathies with a gin and tonic. Did you plan that? No, you said you were going to do it.
No, it's all good, and but you'll have beautiful memories in the garden, and you'll be what a lovely space to retire to. So many people take up gardening with much more earnest when they retire, because then they have so much time to dedicate to it. And now we know the massive physical, mental, and well-being benefits gardening brings. It's just great to see it embraced, not just by people who have more time on their hands, but by everybody. It's fab.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because it used to always be seen as it was kind of like gardens for old people, gardens for pensioners. And it's like, no, gardens for everyone. You have to just make it work for you. I mean, I work full time and have, if you like, a part-time job as YouTube and, you know, all that stuff. But, you know, you can still make your gardening work for you as long as you're a bit sensible about it.
But then how fabulous would it be to start gardening at a younger age?
Oh, no.
So that by the time you get to retire and have so much more time to enjoy your garden, you have just learned so much more and you're more proficient at everything.
I actually said that to Kate. It's like, I wish we'd discovered it when we were in our, say, 30s. I would have homesteaded. I would have totally went for it. I'm just not physically capable these days.
Well, what a lovely chat, and what a nice place to leave it then, thinking about going off into our retirement and our gardens.
I'll have to go and count how many years there are to go.
And all the listeners who are already retired are thinking, you should see the state of my garden. I don't have all this extra time that you're talking about.
I know, I'm just thinking that they're like, do you think we do nothing?
No, we're aspiring to be in the garden for more time. We're aspiring to not have other jobs, but one day hopefully we'll get there.
The grass is always greener, as they say.
It will be an absolute privilege to get to that stage of our lives and to have more time in the garden. Absolutely.
Definitely, yeah.
Well, it was lovely to talk to you and just to chat a wee bit more about your garden. And obviously we will link in the show notes to your YouTube channel. And I would encourage everyone to go on and have a look. There are, I think at last count, 285 videos on there. So as the nights are fair drawing in, there's certainly hours and hours and hours of footage on there.
Get your research in over winter.
And it will serve you much better than putting on a box set on Netflix. Sit down with a wee libation and just watch through 285 videos. Of course, there'll be more on there by the time you get to the end of it, but you'll learn so much from what Eli and Kate have done in their garden, which is on the east coast of Scotland, but it's a garden in Scotland that's being very, very productive, and it's being just beautiful in what it's outputting. So I would encourage everyone to go on and have a look at your YouTube channel.
Thank you very much. It's been fabby to come and chat to another gardener.
Absolutely. I hope to catch up with you again soon then. Best of luck.
And to yourself. See ya.
Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Scotland Grows Show. Don't forget to follow us on social media by searching for Scotland Grows across Facebook, Instagram, Twitter or LinkedIn. And sign up for our mailing list so you never miss an episode of the Scotland Grows Show. And if you are not yet subscribed to receive Scotland Grows magazine, 6 times a year, straight to your inbox, literally packed with Scottish gardening goodness, then be sure to do so as soon as possible, and you'll even get access to all the back issues. Details can be found on our website at scotlandgrowsmagazine.com, across our social media feeds, and in the show notes for each episode. The information on the National Trust for Scotland's Root subscription is also in the show notes, and they would appreciate your support to help National Trust for Scotland's gardens and designed landscapes thrive. I look forward to you joining me on the next episode of the Scotland Grows Show as we celebrate Scottish gardening.